At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
It's a pattern of behavior that we're seeing on the part of law enforcement, ignoring obvious signs, obvious red flags that at the very least should be looked into. You don't have to think they're real, but you got to look because they all connect to the same group of people that we're talking about here. Some of the same people whose interviews, video interviews, just happened to be taped over when the defense of Richard Allen said in the discovery process, we'd like to see those, please. Oh, they're gone. We lost them. We accidentally taped them over on the DVR. Whoops. Oh, and by the way, there was nothing on them. You got to trust us. There was nothing there. Nothing there at all. We have a great track record of not lying. So, of course, what we're saying is true. That's gone. These letters, we don't know where they're at right now. I'm thinking they're probably, as we're speaking, still trying to figure out what story they're going to tell of, did we lose them? Did we get them? Do we have them in our presence, but we just never even realized we had them? Or what happened here? Because this is going to take a little coordination, too, on the part of all of them, if they're going to cover this up, because we have to, number one, determine if it left the jail facility or the prison facility where he was. Did it get to McClelland, and then what happened with it after that? If he's covering this up, if he never dispersed this information, we have a very big problem here in terms of why. Why was this part not out there? But the other bigger problem is you still have Judge Gull, who is going to do the ultimate ruling on this until it gets to an appellate level.
Yeah, because Gull is still in charge of this, my faith is low right now just because things don't seem to be adding up every time she rules on something. And so we'll see how that goes. For people, you know, paying attention to this, just do this on your own. You don't need, you know, us sitting here as any experts or anything talking about human behavior. Just do this on your own. Google the probability, just type in the Google machine. What's the probability of a murder of two girls by someone unknown in their life?
Just that alone.
Just that alone. And then Google this. Compare that to the probability of murder of two young girls by someone who is a sex offender and has connectivity in their lives.
And you find them on their property.
And so when you just look at the law of probability, and this is what investigators do. Again, it's not like a 50-pound brain kind of thing. When you're doing an investigation, you have a lot of data points and you have to create filters. Filters help us focus in on areas that we need to spend our time on and areas we don't. So if you have three individuals that are proximity that might be potential suspects and you just do that simple calculation, where are you going to spend your time? Well, I have a sex offender and I have someone that's also connected with the family. It's his property. And he's there. See what I mean? And mm-hmm. Then you have Richard Allen. And also you have a physical description of someone and a photograph of someone on the bridge that looks like one of the guys. That's not Richard Allen.
Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. Move on, everybody. There's
this
nothing.
Is not 50-pound brain kind of stuff. And then when you then put all the life arcs behind these things, you just look at what matches and what doesn't match. And Richard Allen just is not a match. And if all you're hanging that on is a shell, you know, a round that might match his gun, and the fact that he confessed while being tortured,
mm-hmm.
That's a crap case.
Add that to the mix. Yeah, I love the confessed while being tortured.
I'm throwing that torture in there. That was torture.
What will it take in a case like this for something else to get involved? With the FBI to get involved in this, not even necessarily, I mean, yes, on the case itself, but I feel like they need to be walking into a public corruption investigation of some sort here, because this town has got their work cut out for them. I'm just beginning to dig further beyond this case into some other cases in this town, and oh my God, this town has issues. Their policing system has issues. There clearly is something going on here where we're going to steer the narrative however we want to do it to cover for whoever we need to do it for. And people resign and they step down and they shift this place and that place. But nobody ever really gets held accountable for it, under the law, other than when they walked away from it, when it really gets tough. What would that take? I mean, what would it take to trigger an FBI investigation into the actual town itself? Because I think that you're not going to get anything changed here. We're not going to get a legitimate investigation. We're not going to get anything as long as the same people who are there are there.
I'll tell you, one of the challenges of public corruption investigations is sources.
Yeah.
You know, just think back to the Alec Murdoch case, getting people to flip against the establishment,
mm-hmm.
in where it's so rooted so deeply, that is a big challenge. Because you can, you know, the number one thing the FBI does is we prosecute cases, and we do that by developing confidential human sources. That's pretty much the bedrock. You're investigating a case and all the violations that we have, whether it's counterintelligence like I did, or whether it's crime, you know, other types of crimes that the rest of the Bureau did. And we do those cases by utilizing sophisticated techniques. Sometimes those are technical, but technical we usually go to when we fail to get confidential human sources. Human beings are the best sources of information for all of our investigations. They lead us down roads. They give us the nuance. They give us context. They give us everything we need for prosecution to get the data points, the forensic data points we're going to need to bolster that case. But it's always confidential human sources. And so, especially in a public corruption case, these people, if they have a life arc of reps of covering for each other, their own sort of wall, breaking that wall and getting someone on the inside to flip and tell us, tell the Bureau, or tell anyone outside there what's actually going on and what sheet of paper to look up, to lift up and see, and actually see how things are being done, that is the great challenge of public corruption case. And also because, you know, unfortunately, the way the government tends to work, it's like, what's the bang for the buck? What kind of remunerations, you know, what kind of dollar amounts are tied to this? Public corruption cases are very challenging. Here's another reason why public corruption cases are challenging. So again, I don't know the dynamic of the field office on the FBI that covers this region,
mm-hmm.
but this isn't just one thing they're covering. They're covering a lot of things. There's probably there's always a lot of law enforcement collaboration that goes on between federal, state, and local. And if they're working on other investigations that they need certain people for, certain resources for, they don't want to ruin a relationship here because we need a relationship here because we're doing X, Y, and Z. So you have a lot of bureaucratic gyrations that are also going on that play into that, which again, I'm not privy to. I can't imagine what a small place like Delphi would be in that mix. But when you're looking at resources at the federal and state level that might be drawn into other areas, taking a huge focus to go into Delphi might be a great challenge, especially if you don't have the ability to crack that wall.
Well, I might have some sources here. We have the former Carroll County Chief Deputy Michael Thomas, who sued after being demoted for questioning the Delphi investigation. If he has evidence of misconduct, that could be an interesting source. He was basically demoted and pushed away when he said, I don't think the way you're handling this is correct. You also have Ricky Davis, who we were just talking about, the inmate who claimed Ron Logan confessed and sent letters to McClelland, could potentially work with the FBI to verify that the letters were ever received, logged, or discarded. Now, the thing that Delphi officials say about him, and I always find it amusing how they use the term miserably to note the word polygraph test. They're always like, he miserably failed his polygraph test. They don't tell us when he took it, who took it, who administered it, what questions were answered. Nothing about that, like the actual facts of if it actually took place. And considering the source, it's saying he miserably failed it. I don't put a whole lot of weight on that. Could the FBI take him in and say, let's do our own polygraph on you. We got some of the best people in the country who know how to do this correctly. We're unbiased. Let's get you in for a polygraph. And if he passes that one, maybe, I know it's not, polygraphs are not admissible in court, but we're talking the investigation standpoint here of, okay, well, what was in those letters, Mr. Davis? And what can you tell us? Because he's not dead. He's still around, at least for now, until, you know, the Delphi gremlins get him. But I'm just wondering if this is true, if he has this information and we can take away that BS of Delphi saying, oh, he failed the polygraph miserably. I think there's some credibility here that could probably go somewhere. Plus you got the other officer who basically was, you know, demoted and demeaned.
Yeah, you just need a couple good investigators that are good interviewers. And even with the polygraph, you know, just think about this too. You know, everyone listening, watching, think about how many times have we seen someone saying, besides Maury Povich, the lie detector said this, the truth detector said this, we detected, no, it doesn't work.
You're a dad!
Right. See, that stuff doesn't work. Yeah. What the polygraph is great for, as a great friend of mine said, it's a great prop for someone who's a fantastic interviewer. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is that a great polygraph interview, the interview itself is what's admissible. It's the confession that they get because of that interview, which is admissible or not. See what I mean? So it's actually the interview itself. Using a prop of a polygraph because it might inspire someone to think that I have to tell the truth or it's showmanship a lot of times. But a great polygrapher is first and foremost the most amazing interviewer that inspires someone to feel safe, to bring their shields down so they can feel safe to share all the heinous, horrible things they did. And there's a prop of a polygraph right here.
I hope they do something. And there could be other folks out there listening in Delphi right now who may not realize the power that they have. If you're aware of anything that's gone on, if you're, you know, someone who's working, with a court official, a clerk, an administrative staff member, former employees, anything like that, who has some knowledge of things that were influenced by pressure from one side or the other, prosecutors in this case, specifically law enforcement or external figures, speak up. There's ways of contacting the FBI to do just that. There's a lot of, because again, this all doesn't happen in a vacuum. There's people involved in this, whether they even realized at the time they were involved in something nefarious or not. Even if something nefarious isn't happening right now, if it's just all complete, you know, horrible decision making, and we ended up doing all these bad, horrible things, and we put a guy away because we're that incompetent. Still needs to be looked into, nefarious or not.
Right. 100%. You know, and it's hard to recognize because, again, I'm always the glass half full kind of guy. I'm never thinking things are nefarious. I don't think of conspiracies. I think people fall into easy groupthink.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still on the side of, unless I see data. You know, to me, this is a really great, fantastic, horrendous case of a lot of groupthink that went sideways. Again, but we do have data points that says there could be nefarious things going on. Because, I mean, how many times have we seen a lot of things going sideways because the local officials are not as up and up as they should be?
Mm-mm. No way, shape, or form.
Yep.
The world of true crime never stops, and neither do we. Press subscribe now to get daily updates, in-depth analysis, and expert opinions from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.